Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HRNP guest line. Joining us now, James Palmer of NFL Network, former Houstonian. Thanks, James, for taking a few minutes to hang out with the Killer Bees on this Thursday afternoon. You were out at Texans training camp the other day. Glowing things to say about Davis Mills. I know you compared like the rookie draft class, things like that, but just Davis Mills is an NFL caliber starting quarterback. What do you see and why can't it work?
Well, he looked at the 2 days I was there at camp. He definitely looked like an NFL starting caliber quarterback. And I had a chance to talk to Davis for a while. And, you know, he was very open and honest, guys, about, you know, the way last year went, and said, you know, I wasn't ready to play when I got thrown into it early, and I think rightfully so if anybody watched training camp and the number of snaps that he was getting. And then when you saw him take a break and then come back for those final 10 games, I mean, that was there's an argument to be made for his case to be playing better than any other rookie quarterback last year. You'd say his biggest competition is probably Mac Jones. I mean, in your rookie season, if you're thrown in on a roster that the Texans had, I think that should be put in place as well, with the coaching situation that was there as well, as opposed to the situation Mac Jones was thrown into, with obviously we know where he landed, and the environment is so important to what happens with young quarterbacks. No quarterback as a rookie last year had a higher completion percentage. No quarterback had a greater yards per game than Davis Mills. And the biggest, you know, endorsement you can get is from your own teammates. When I had a chance to talk to a couple of veteran guys that have been there, the thought was this: down the stretch, you know, if you get down and you got a rookie quarterback as a defense, you start going, well, I mean, whether you want to believe it or not, they're going, you know, not sure if we can come back from this. With Davis, it was, if we get a stop, we know he can turn this around and go and score on the opposite side. When defenders that have been in this league start thinking that way about you during your rookie season, I think you got a pretty good chance to be something. And obviously, we're not saying right now, and I'm not saying he's going to light the world on fire in his second season, but I think this year there is a reason why they want to see how he plays. And I think that's extremely strong endorsement to Davis Mills. And when I talked to Christian Kirksey after practice, I think on Tuesday, we talked about everything under the sun with the organization. I was like, is this Davis Mills' team? He was like, oh, no question. This is his team. This is his team.
James, you cover, obviously, you used to be in the market, but you cover all the NFL. But you've seen this Texans team now under Lovie Smith as opposed to the team you saw a year ago under David Culley. Tell me the differences. Tell me what you've seen so far, and tell me why Houston Texans fans should feel like this is totally different in a positive way.
You know, it's funny. I was talking to somebody in the league yesterday, and they were like, you know, everybody was kind of scratching their head. Lovie, okay, let's see. And now they're like, I think this could work. Like, I think this could work. And I had a chance to talk to him after practice for a little bit, and watching practice for 2 days, I do think they were really well-run practices. And like I said, I'm going around camp to camp. I was in Vegas before that. I'm in Denver today. I'm heading to Kansas City. And how practices run is you know, pretty indicative of sometimes of what you might see from the team. I thought they towed the line of being physical and not being overly physical in practice with the pads on is a really good sign of kind of how guys are flying around in that sense. Do I think there's plenty of question marks? For sure. But do I see some bright spots under Lovie? Yeah. And I think the number one thing is he's going to go let rookies play. And I think that's important with this draft class. I've talked to enough decision makers around the league over the last month about how everybody's looking, and there's several people around the league that are like, this was a pretty good draft class down there in Houston. And I would agree. I did Derek Stingley's pro day at LSU. He looks like he's getting better each and every day that I've seen him at camp. And he definitely has the physicality to come in, and he's going to be the number one corner right off the bat. I'm told he might be following guys already early in the season. Lovey's letting these young guys go and play. You know, Jalen Petrie is another one of them that some of you guys told me is just a really good football player. That's what he is. He does everything kind of right. Very smart player. And, you know, and Christian Harris comes in, and you just have guys that he's letting go out and play early. And I think that's an important part of where this organization is, right? To let these guys go and play early. I think where they're at as an organization, that's really big.
It's James Palmer of NFL Network joining us on the HRMP guest line. And I think it's a breath of fresh air in this city of letting the rookies play. And I know Bill O'Brien, when he was the head coach, he kind of scoffed at the idea of playing rookies, can't be bothered by rookies. It was a different team then. That was a playoff-worthy team. I don't think anybody's really banging on the door saying the Texans will be a playoff team right now. In the direction of this organization, young guys, develop them, that's going to be the foundation, the core of what ultimately gets the Texans back to the postseason and the playoffs. When you look at the Texans from the broad view and you evaluate what Nick Caserio is doing with the Houston Texans, and you alluded to some of it with Lovey, you know, it's not the embarrassment that they once were. What do you think they are in the rebuild? How quickly can they be formidable when you talk about a postseason team in the NFL?
Yeah, well, when you're looking at your rebuild, right, the quarterback's always the number one spot that you're looking at. And if you find that quarterback, then it changes everything. And I think you're looking at a decent comparison of a team that's probably further along than the Houston Texans, but kind of has some of the same build in question, is the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, right now they're taking a look going, all right, Jalen Hurts took us to the postseason last year. And my comparison is this, because I do think as a roster, the Eagles are a better roster than the Texans. But my point is, when you're looking at your quarterback and you're evaluating your quarterback, if Jalen Hurts is the guy, and he's a second-round pick, and Howie still has those two first-round picks for next season, then you can argue use all of your capital to continue to build your roster around that quarterback. Davis Mills being a third-round pick and all of the capital they have from Deshaun Watson's trade, like then you can start building around your quarterback and building your roster. And you kind of saw that already in kind of what happened with this year's draft. And you're like, these are a lot of pretty good players and pretty good picks. If you get those third and fourth rounders to go out there and play like starters, that's extremely important and valuable to you have. And when that third or fourth rounder that the starter is your quarterback, very similar like Seattle, where you're granted a few free years, essentially, in terms of cap space, which they have plenty of, and in terms of how your roster is constructed. So, yeah, in terms of the rebuild, I think everything is on the shoulders of Davis Mills. If they think he can be a quarterback that's in the top half of the league this year and then and beyond, then you might have something to build around. And I think that's the crux of any roster rebuild with any team.
So that following up on that with two quick ones that I think are related in that, one, what does Davis Mills have to do, and is there a scenario where he does enough that they do what you say and say, now we realize we have our quarterback of the future and we're not going to focus on drafting another one, as opposed to, as we've talked about, a Bryce Young or others, and bringing in another guy, and there's really not a whole lot that he can do other to really take away from, especially Caserio's New England background of saying we love competition, Garoppolo and others always bringing him in. And then how much of an influence and a positive is Pep Hamilton in the development of a Davis Mills?
Oh, I'll go with the Pep one first. I had a chance to talk to Pep a little bit, and I don't think him moving in should be understated by any means. And because you look at the pelts he has on the wall, who he's worked with, and those are things that he's pulling up when he's working with Davis Mills. You know, he's looking like, hey, look, I did this with Andrew Luck, and he ran it this way, and look, we could have done it this way to protect him a little bit better, to protect him from himself, to operate it in this sense. And if you're a young quarterback and you're Davis Mills and you're looking, oh, that's Andrew Luck, and that's what this guy did with him, that's how he set him up to succeed, I think there's a really good cohesion between Pep and between Davis. I think he's one of these coaches that this could be actually this could actually be detrimental to the Houston Texans. If he turns Davis Mills into a really good player this year, and you see something from Davis Mills and you're going, okay, Texans have a quarterback, they may lose Pep Hamilton to a head coaching job. And so I think that's something that you do have to keep your eye on, because he's in one of those spots where that happens sometimes. Oh, great, now we got the quarterback. Oh, the guy who was just working with him, everybody just saw what he did with the third-round pick. Let's look at this guy as our head coaching spot. That's a little bit of a spot you could be in with Pep. And then what does Davis have to do? I think if they lose games, and I'll be honest, they're probably going to lose games this year, right? But are they losing them because of Davis Mills, or are they losing them because maybe they don't have a talented enough roster, or there's a lot of new pieces and young pieces that are playing around him? Well, if it's not Davis Mills' fault, you're losing games. And he's coming back in games late. And, you know, he's giving you that confidence in the second half that you may be down, but he's going to bring you back. If you have that feeling and he has that grasp of a new offense, I think the way he operated in practice in the 2 days I saw gives me a bit of an idea of how he's going to operate. One instance I want to tell you guys about is there was an 11-on-11 period, and the running back ran the wrong play. And a lot of times that ball either gets spiked or a quarterback kind of goes, oh, he's not where he's supposed to be, and they panic. He just saw the running back ran the wrong play. He turns, throws a dart on the other side to his first read. Like, it didn't faze him one bit. And the other play in the two-minute drill that he hit Brevin Jordan down the seam was the other spot that I really, really thought shined to me. And that's a play that was well covered, a play in a two-minute drill that he also completed a 4th-and-16. I think the calmness and the control is what you're looking for. And if you're not the reason you're losing games, they may have something.
James Palmer joining us on the HR&P guest line. One, I want to ask you real quick, from one current Texans quarterback to the former Texans quarterback, Deshaun Watson, obviously a huge storyline in the NFL this offseason. Got Sue Robinson's judgment earlier this week. Roger Goodell is going to appeal, going to find somebody outside of the NFL to handle the appeal. Ultimately, what do you think the suspension is going to be for Deshaun? I know that's a loaded question.
Yeah, it's a loaded question because right now we're 24 hours from finding out that the appeal came down, and that's some people saw that coming, the way that Sue L. Robinson worded things, and some people actually even in the Browns organization were surprised that the appeal happened. So now we're in the appeal process where still now multiple things can happen. They can go back to negotiating some sort of settlement, which was discussed, you know, prior a couple of months ago. If both sides would come to a settlement agreement, that could be back on the table. To my understanding, the NFL would like this to go back to a year suspension, an indefinite suspension, to where he could reapply after the year. So that is obviously in play of what they want. An appeal is in play. And then if they end up changing the games in any capacity or the way it changes in that, this could go to federal court. And from my understanding is that's a very real possibility as well. I mean, we saw Ezekiel Elliott's case go to multiple courts and take some time. I think the point I'm making is we still don't have a whole lot of clarity of what direction this is going to go, whether both sides come to some sort of settlement and a new suspension or fine, which is something the league wanted, which was not part of this ruling, comes down. That could be a possibility, or this thing could go on for a much longer period of time.
James Palmer, thank you so much for your time. Great stuff as always, and enjoy your trip around the league. I know you've been popping up some camps around town.
It felt good to be home, guys. I'll tell you, that's where my son was born. It felt good to be in Houston. I knew where to look on the practice field, even though it's a different coaching staff.
Yeah.
It was great. We're bouncing around, but it was a fun stop.
All right, James. Thank you very much. Hope to catch up again soon. James Palmer covers the NFL for NFL Network. Derek Stingley, is he going to be a follow receivers around type of guy? And will Davis Mills be a top half of the league quarterback, like James Palmer suggests could be possible? It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, another word for Doc Linville. Look, guys, you look in the mirror every morning when you get up, when you're getting ready for work, and a lot of times you wish you didn't because you know that you don't have the hair you once had, and you feel like that day is coming where you got to shave it all off or start, you know, just wearing a cap or consider other options like that mask the problems, like sprays and creams and foams. Well, before you do any of that, I encourage you to go to 975hair.com because when you do, you'll realize that you can set up a meeting with Doc Linville, the premier expert, in my opinion, in the NeoGraft procedure here locally in Houston, and he can help you without having to shave it all off or resort to just trying to cover it up. Doc Linville and the NeoGraft procedure worked for me. It worked for John Granato. It's worked for Fred Fowler and Jake Asman and a ton of other people too. And the listeners that go to 975hair.com will find out that they can find out all about the procedure without spending a single dime. Because as a listener to ESPN, you get a consultation with Doc Linville's office for free, and it normally costs $150. And you can go in and ask all the questions you want and find out all the information you need to find out if this procedure is right for you too. The thing that is really interesting to me that really sold me on the entire process is, one, it's your own hair, and it's taken from areas that you will genetically never lose it, the sides and the back. And it's locating that hair in areas where you need it, whether you have a thinning spot or you just have a bald spot and you think that there's no way possible to get hair back in that area again. You can. and it's possible. And for me, it was painless, and it was an unbelievable procedure in terms of it was a game changer because I could see that hair growing on a daily basis. Once they put that put those follicles where they belonged, I saw the development on a daily basis. It takes 6 to 9 months to see the full results. But the bigger thing to me was that impactful statement that he made to me where he said, you know that 95%+ of the follicles we move stay and grow and will be there for the rest of your life. And I went, boom, that's it for me. That is a game changer. You can turn my 8 head back into a 4 head and get me my old hairline back. I'm trying this. I'm in for this. This sounds great to me. And he basically backed everything up. The procedure was fantastic. Check them out today. See if it's right for you, too. Go to 975hair.com. Go see my friend, Doc Lind.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
James Palmer just joined us, former Houstonian, now covers the NFL, works at NFL Network. Talked about Derek Stingley. They look at him as a follow the number one receiver around guy. Now, what I've seen at camp the day that I was out there, he was more just on one side of the field than following the best guy every single time. Which one of those matters the most to you? Is it the one that can go all over the field? He follows Devontae Adams wherever he's lined up, or you just put him on one side of the field and he takes away that half of the field?
I've always been the guy that feels like your best defender should cover their best receiver no matter where he is in the offense. And I feel like it's a cop-out from the coaching staff to the players. And I think most players would tell you, Jalen Ramsey would tell you 100 times out of 100, I want that guy. I don't want to say, well, that wasn't my side of the field, so we had someone else covering him, and realize we lost a game that I feel like I could have impacted if I had the chance. I want him covering the other team's best receiver no matter where that other team's receiver is on the field, and I hope that's the case. Because the thing that I took away from what James Palmer told us more than anything else that I'm really excited about is Lovey's going to let those rookies play. He's going to let them, you know, take their lumps and learn, but he's going to let them play because that's what we've said all along. We want to be excited about the development of the rookies. Well, you can't see the development if they're not playing against the best players on the other side. I'm excited to see Stingley against those type guys.
Yeah, and he's been doing some like one-on-one stuff with Brandon Cooks, and you know maybe he's lost a couple more than he's won. 7-on-7, 11-on-11. He's not being held back at all with his foot, which
that's
first and foremost. Okay, he looks healthy. It's not going to be a Travis Etienne situation where he misses the entire year, his entire rookie year, because of the Lisfranc. So that's good. That's first and foremost. As far as like being on one half of the field versus moving the other guy, I think a lot of it too is what you're doing defensively. And we know that Lovie Smith is, you know, he's a cover two guy by default, by nature. He played a lot less cover two last year, especially the last half of last season than he did in the first half of last season. So it kind of depends on how much of that's going to be your base defense. Because if you're dropping back, you're playing cover two, even like a quarter of the time, then it's like, okay, maybe he's better suited to kind of decoy what you're in, just having him on one half of the field. Okay, we can drop back in coverage here. We can play man-to-man. It might not be as telling what you're doing defensively if he's not moving all over the field. Ultimately, though, if you're drafting a cornerback at number three, you're right. He needs to be the dude defending the number one playmaker on the other team. So I lean to be, you know, follow the best guy on the field. Even if it's not in his rookie year, like if you're easing him into it, if you're, you know, showing him the way, then, you know, it's something that he needs to develop into. For me, it doesn't necessarily have to be right out of the gate. Now, the thing that I love that James Palmer said to us, which is something that we've seen with Lovie Smith, and I think it's the overall philosophy and direction of this organization, which is being led by Nick Caserio, they're going to let their rookies play, even if it means the rookies are making mistakes, even if it means Derek Stingley gets burned, even if it means Jalen Petrie's being too aggressive and he gets beat over the top, even if it means Kenyon Green, you know, doesn't block the nose tackle in a specific play. They're going to allow them to make mistakes because of where the organization's at. Look, we laughed at Bill O'Brien. Oh, well, they're rookies. He didn't like playing rookies because they make mistakes, and he was a playoff-caliber team, and he didn't want a rookie to cost his team a game. So, like, you can kind of understand Bill O'Brien's point there because, you know, the team was in a different spot than the team now. You know, I disagree with O'Brien, but you can kind of understand it.
He's not alone. I mean, there's so many veteran coaches that they're thinking.
And it depends on where you are as an organization. If you're favored to win 10 games, or if your Vegas total is 10 games, you're going to have a different perception than if your Vegas total is 4.5.
That was a Van Gundy staple forever and a day. That's why they traded Rudy Gay for Shane Battier.
So I'm not going to give Lovie Smith and Nick Caserio points here because they're willing to play the rookies. They have to play the rookies. That's their most talented players, and they want them to be the foundation of this organization. But I do like it that you're going to let them make mistakes. You're going to let them have errors. You're going to maybe it costs you a game. Maybe Derek Stingley gets burned in a 2-minute drill. But for the overall best interest of this organization, they have to be on the field and making those
question.
Mistakes.
Like I said, and here's the other thing, that the caveat that we didn't mention yet, which is that in a way still plays to executing their plan. Because if they're going to make mistakes, they're not worried about whether it costs you a game or not. They're worried more about, can this guy play? Is that a correctable mistake? Are those things that he needs to learn that he's going to get more from making that mistake during a game on the field than he is on the practice field when going up one-on-one against Brandon Cooks in the case of Stingley, or other guys going up against their own team in ones versus ones? I think that's just another way, too, where you're following your own plan to say, look, I want these guys out there. I want to see how they develop. I also want everybody to realize that if they make mistakes and it costs us a game, that's not the top priority for us right now. Our top priority is getting the best analysis of each guy that we drafted a year ago.
Look, they're going to try to win. Yeah. They're going to try, and they should. Like, the embrace the suck doesn't mean the Texans need to be missing kicks on purpose to lose games.
Well, Barron will do that for you.
So, this it has to be the month. Like, they're going to try out and go. They're going to try to win games. They're going to game plan to try to win a game. That's the way you should handle business in the NFL. Nobody's calling for the Texans to tank. But the way that Caserio's built this roster, he does have the long term in mind more than he has the short term. That's why Kyle Allen's the backup quarterback on this team and not like a veteran, like maybe Jimmy Garoppolo. That they want the young kids to learn. And if they win because of the young kids, that's great. You're winning because of the young kids.
They also want them to, like in the case of, like you mentioned, and Ocho didn't even realize that was the backup quarterback situation.
Yeah.
The other thing that you don't want to do is you don't want a guy looking over his shoulder so he's apprehensive about, if I make a mistake, this could cost me my job. This could put me back on the bench, or I might not be the guy that they thought I was. Mm-hmm. So they also want to put these guys in the position that, hey, don't look over your shoulder, look forward. But when you're looking forward to playing the game on a night-by-night basis or a Sunday-by-Sunday basis, play it to the best of your abilities. Don't hold back. Don't think, if I make this mistake, I'm going to sit you down. But realize that we need to see who you really are. So don't tell me after the fact, or at the end of the season, in the case of Mills, if I didn't know that there was a veteran quarterback behind me that was trying to take my job, I might have tried to make that pass, or I might have made that decision differently.
Yeah.
And I think that's another factor that factors in, because a lot of guys, whether you admit it now or not, after the fact will tell you, if I knew that there was competition for my job, and I knew that if I made the wrong decision when trying to make a split second decision, that it could cost me that job, I'm not doing it.
My counterpoint to that is always going to be, if I have a quarterback that's worried about that, then I
don't think
that,
much of that. But I'm not talking about just the quarterback position either.
Now, my biggest takeaway for camp isn't sexy when I went out there the other day. Mm-hmm. But if Davis Mills sprains an ankle and he's out for 4 weeks, Texans are in some deep trouble.
Yeah.
The Texans are in some deep trouble. And, they probably don't care, because I don't really think that they're prioritizing wins versus the development of their young players. But, I think that's an example of what Nick Caserio is trying to tell you, that it's more long-term than short-term.
Mm-hmm.
Because, Kyle Allen, go Cougs, you're in trouble if he's your starter. If Jeff Driskel comes into a game, who, let's keep in mind, they try to convert this dude to a tight end. If he's a good quarterback, you're not trying to convert him to a tight end. They're in some trouble if Davis Mills has to miss
some
time.
The biggest point in all that. They're trying to tell you, without telling you flat out, that it isn't about this upcoming mm-hmm. season. The biggest thing where that would be a setback to them is not being able to fully evaluate Davis Mills to figure out who he is and what he can be for your franchise because he's hurt. But other than that, it tells you, without telling you, exactly what we've been saying all along. Embrace the suck, or whatever kind of mantra you want to put on it, but don't be focused on wins and losses. Be savvy enough to see that they can make a whole lot of positive progress without putting a W on the board.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, the more I think of it, the more I think about the Astros center field position, I think I want it to be Kyle Tucker. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you that Patrick Creighton just texted me just this minute to tell me, for some odd reason, he's at Apollo Men's Health. He's seen great results from Apollo Men's Health, and he loves Dr. O and his staff and all the great people at Apollo Men's Health. Another satisfied customer, you could be the next in line. Dr. O and Apollo Men's Health have been taking care of ESPN listeners for quite a while now, and the bottom line is they take care of you on a daily basis. What I mean by that is people are constantly going to see Doc O and his staff because they say, I don't have the energy I once had in my life. I'm not trying to win an Olympic gold medal. I'm trying to win the day. I'm trying to have enough juice left in the tank so that I can get my job done, I can work out, I can take care of family matters and honeydews all within a 24-hour period. Well, if you go see the people at Apollo Men's Health, they can help you get to where you can get that back again, and you can have pep in your step. They've done it for me. They've done it for PC. They've done it for so many others, and you could be next in line. Go to ApolloMH.com and see all the different ways they can help you. First thing you'll realize is there's two locations to better serve you near downtown Houston with a League City location coming up in the near future. But other than that, book your first appointment, because basically you'll find out most major insurance is accepted, discounts for military personnel and first responders. It won't be because you can't afford the appointment. But once you get in there and you meet with the staff, make sure you're honest with them. They're going to ask what you're trying to achieve. They're going to ask you tough questions to see what has been the cause and the root of where you are now. And then they're going to put you on a plan that works, and they're going to get your results. It could be anything. It could be starting a workout program. It could be recovering quicker in the gym. Or it could be a lack of energy, which is where they do hormone therapy for both men and women. And there's a variety of different ways you can administer it. Or just like I do, a B12 shot every week that gives you a little extra energy and makes you feel a little better and have a little bit more energy to do the things you need to do. I love these people because they've taken care of me. They can take care of you, too. Check them out today. They're the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Okay, the Astros center field position has been... How would you describe the Astros center field position? Bad?
A revolving door?
Revolving door? A black hole in the lineup? I mean, they've run out some center fielders now. Jose Siri?
I wouldn't say a black
Dubon,
hole Myers? Because of the fact that, in every game, defense means something. And when you put Siri out there for sure, you're putting a Gold Glove caliber center fielder out there.
Mm-hmm.
But and Jake has his moments. I never see it as good as James Click sees of Jake, but...
Yeah, find somebody that loves you as much as Click loves Jake. Now, offensively, they've gotten next to nothing in center field. Whether it was Siri, Chaz probably gave you the best offense in center field, but he's no longer a center fielder. Since Jake Myers has come back, Chaz McCormick has started one game in center field. So he started one more game in center field than either one of us have for the Houston Astros since Jake Myers has come back. So I'm not willing to call Chaz McCormick a center fielder if they're not going to play Chaz McCormick in center field since Jake Myers came back. We see Mauricio Dubon out there sometimes against lefties, and I like Dubon as a player. He had a fine catch yesterday. He's just not an everyday guy. He's a utility guy. He starts when the players need some days off all around the diamond. That's where his value's at. He's not an everyday regular, in my opinion. So you look at this team as currently constructed. If you're not seeing a Jake Myers resurgence, okay, is his bat, do you want him getting regular at-bats in the postseason? Probably not. Chaz McCormick is not a center fielder. They refused to play him in center field. He started one game there. Mauricio Dubon, again, not an everyday guy. So the more I think of this, and I know that you're losing defense here, and it also requires the health of Michael Brantley. But your best offense is obviously with Kyle Tucker in center field. Trey Mancini's not somebody I want coming off the bench. I want his bat in the lineup four times a game. Like, I don't want him as a pinch hitter late in games in situational spots. He needs to get four at-bats a game. Kyle Tucker needs to get four at-bats a game. Jordan Alvarez needs to get four at-bats a game. And if Michael Brantley is healthy, he needs to get four at-bats a game. The only way, and if Yuli continues to swing well, he needs four at-bats a game. So the only way you can get all of those guys in the lineup is if Kyle Tucker's playing center field.
Yeah, look, I think that James Click is going to go deep into his analytical formulas to find out and break down how realistic that can be. Because you can say that, in the playoffs it's escalated, but during the regular season, a team that scores this, and believe me, they know all this stuff, but a team that scores this many runs a game and averages this many runs a game has this percentage chance of winning. And if boosting the offense to the levels that you're talking about doesn't greatly detract from your defensive prowess, then I believe that's something they have to consider because, one, you got to stop the revolving door at a certain point. Mm-hmm. Two, I totally agree with you. Offensively, I want Mancini's bat in the lineup. If Brantley's there, one thing we do know is he is a stick, and he has to be in there for you to be able to field your best team offensively. So if that means Tucker plays center field and maybe you lose a little in the alleys, but you're scoring, you know, 1.5 to 2 runs more a game in the time when it means the most, then I think you absolutely have to consider it. As much as it scares me sometimes to think that how that loping stride that never looks like there's any intensity in it and Kyle Tucker's now going to play center field.
Yeah.
I look at some of the apprehension I've seen out of Jake Meyers, no matter how quick and athletic he's been this season, and the fact that he hasn't made the plays, that I might live with whatever Kyle Tucker does in center field if it means offensively it's a better lineup.
Meyers has been good defensively, where the computers will tell you that. Now, he does have hesitation coming into balls. We saw that with the collision and going to the wall. Huge hesitation there. He still looks very tentative with his shoulder. He really looks very tentative with that shoulder. Look, you're going to lose defensively moving Tucker to center field and having Mancini in right and Brantley in left field. And Ocho brings up the point of Aledmys Diaz, too. Like, the way Aledmys Diaz is swinging the bat, okay, we'll eliminate Michael Brantley for a moment since he's on the IL. Let's mention Aledmys Diaz in this conversation. I'd rather see Aledmys Diaz get 4 trips to the batter's box than Jake Meyers, than Chaz McCormick, than Mauricio Dubon. So there's going to be days where, like, okay, your best offensive lineup isn't going to be your best defensive lineup. But the Astros have the luxury of thinking about the postseason. So whenever I start thinking about the postseason, like, I'm thinking of scoring some runs. I know you got to defend. I know you got to do all that stuff. But if you're looking at your best offensive lineup, Jake Meyers ain't in it. Chaz McCormick ain't in it. Mauricio Dubon ain't in it. And let's keep in mind, too, Kyle Tucker started more World Series games in center field than any other player for the Houston Astros.
Yeah, look, if it's something that they've already been familiar with and know they're capable of putting out there, they're probably going to consider doing it again. And when you look at the other options that you have now that the deadline has passed us and you really don't want to do Jake Meyers part two by bringing up Leon or someone like that and experimenting, and though I do think they might consider it in September, I think that the playoffs is obviously something where you're not going to start screwing around experimenting. You damn well better know one way or another you're committed. And being committed means, look, we may not be defensively where we once were, but we might be a whole hell of a lot better based on what offensive lineup we can put out there. It's the same reason we're talking about putting Vasquez out there as your everyday catcher more so in the playoffs than a Martin Maldonado. It's not because you hate Maldonado, but you know offensively you can't turn the other way and look away from what Vasquez does as opposed to Maldi at the plate. And if you can put Vasquez in that lineup and Tucker's in center field and you know the potency of that team, not just for power, but for average and what that does in any other team that's pitching against that lineup, you realize that's a huge strength.
If we just, like, okay, operate on the thought Yuli's going to be the second hitter because he's hitting well. Dusty doesn't want to move him because he's hot. Okay, fine. I'll concede that. Your best offensive lineup, your best batting order from an offensive perspective, it's Altuve at second. It's Yuli at first. It's Jordan, the DH. I'd rather him DH.
Yeah, I agree.
Bregman at third base. Tucker in center field. Mancini in right. Brantley, if he's back, in left. If he's not back, go Diaz there. Peña, Vasquez. That's your best lineup.
Completely.
That's
offensively,
your best offensive
that is
lineup.
Your best lineup, and that is a lineup that's more formidable than just about any. Because when you talk about the combination of hitting for average and hitting for power and talking about major league hitters that could do damage, I don't know that any other lineup is that complete in baseball from an offensive perspective.
You got power there. You got guys who walk, draw walks, force pitchers to, you know, up their pitch count. It's not as much of a strikeout lineup as some of the other offenses around baseball. Like, this lineup doesn't have swing and miss as much as the Yankees lineup. In fact, the Astros strike out far fewer than almost every single team in baseball. I haven't looked at it in a while, but I think it's top three in baseball.
If Brantley and Mancini are hitting 6 and 7 in a lineup,
Peña's hitting eighth. I mean, Peña's had his struggles, but Peña hitting eighth is like, okay, that's scary. He's hit two. He's bad in the second spot. And Christian Vasquez, one of the best defensive or one of the best offensive catchers in baseball, is in the ninth spot. He's hitting .280. I think he has the second best batting average on the Houston Astros. So, like, I understand look, I know defense just as much as anybody else. I understand the value of defense as well. And you do have to have the tough conversation. And we know James Click values defense. We know that because Tampa Bay values defense. He came from Tampa Bay. James Click values defense. And I understand the argument of runs added versus runs saved. That's why I was very leery of, like, the Andrew Benintendi, because it means moving Tucker to center field. Now, you still kind of forced your way into this conversation because it looks like Mancini's going to get more at-bats in the corner outfield spots than he is at first base because Yuli's swinging a hot bat. So, like, it is a tough conversation. It is how many runs are you adding versus how many runs that you're losing. But that's your best offensive lineup, and I don't think there's any question about it.
You're taking an above-average right fielder and making him a center fielder, though. It's not like you're just taking a schlep and putting him out there.
Yeah, I mean, and the computers don't love Tucker in center.
No, and I don't either.
Yeah.
But I'm saying then you start looking at that and saying from a run-save perspective, if you're not falling off all that much, but you're making a huge jump offensively as opposed to any other team in the league, and how many potential runs a game you could put up there with a lineup that potent, I think that that's where James Click goes, look, I have to play to my strengths, and if my strengths are, I can put an offensive lineup out there that's better than anybody else in the league from an average and power position. I got to do that.
Now, it does talk, I mean, it is the health of Brantley, mm-hmm. which is right now is a huge if, and he was talking about it the other day, I think he met with the media yesterday, saying that, you know, he's trying to get back, it's day-to-day, et cetera,
inflammation
et cetera.
On this
yeah,
and that.
The inflammation's there. James Click mentioned that on the broadcast when he was on the other day, saying that it is the inflammation's flaring up and, you know, they're trying their best to get it out of there. But he also, again, doubled down on the idea that it's not a long-term season-ending injury, that they have every faith that Michael Brantley's going to be back. So he kind of doubled down that Brantley's going to be back by the end of the year.
I think, unlike what he's done in the past with Brantley, where he doesn't need any time in AAA if he does come back and to get his swing back, I believe this inevitably says he's going to have it. You need to know where he is, and he's going to have to get some ABs in Sugar Land and see where he truly is. And then, again, you can live with it if he's just a bat, right? If he can't play the field, that's one thing. But if he's not catching the ball with that arm and shoulder, then I don't know how he can be the hitter that, even close to the hitter that he was before the injury.
Yeah.
No matter where you'd love to have him in the lineup. But now at least you have an insurance policy that can get you the versatility to do what you need to do to cover up for that.
And you have Diaz, too. Like, Diaz is a better bat right now than Jake Myers, than Jazz McCormick. So, like, even if Brantley's not part of that conversation, well, maybe Diaz is part of that conversation. 713-780-ESPN.
And he's been red hot.
Yes, he's been really good. 713-780-3776. Him and Yuli. I'm not sure which guy's hotter. They've both been really hot. What would be your ideal Houston Astros lineup right now? Do or die. Astros are playing in a pivotal Game 7. I don't care against who. What is the lineup that you're most comfortable sending out there? 713-780-ESPN. How much do you believe in Jose Urquidy to continue to be Cy Urquidy? And will the Wohlhausman be watching the Hall of Fame game? We'll kick it around with them next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
3747 is yeah-butting James Click. He said, then again, James Click did say he wasn't done with trades, and when he was, so take it with a grain of salt. That's not true. When James Click said that, he still made another trade.
Yeah, he hadn't traded Jake.
He still traded Jake Odorizzi. Now, I still think that there was other trades he was working on that didn't happen, but he did technically trade. Maybe I'm yeah-butting the texter. He did technically trade Odorizzi after he said that. Cody Stutes with us now. Cody, Brendan's been on this NFL Hall of Fame game kick. His buddies are texting him saying, hey, guys, we made it. We're here. We're finally over the non-football season or whatever. A bunch of his friends are saying, I don't even, like, more people are texting him than I have friends. Hall of Fame game.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, most people wouldn't be surprised by that at all. Will you be watching the Hall of Fame game? Does it move the Stutzer's needle?
Yeah, I've already bet on it.
Well, there you go.
What did you play?
Team Brendan.
I bet the under, and then I have the Jaguars in a parlay.
With what? The under parlay?
Two baseball games.
Oh, so you win Jaguars and two baseball game parlay.
Jaguars, Braves, Astros.
Gosh. My gosh, you're a degenerate. That's ridiculous. So, but will you be sweating it? Will you be watching it?
I don't sweat because I only bet winners. So,
all right.
So I'm
you're
not
undefeated.
No,
sure.
I won't be sweating it. Yeah, I'll check it out. I'm not gonna spend a ton of time on it, but I'll check it out. There should be some players that eventually play in the NFL season that'll play in this game.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's gonna be a lot of players in this game today that we're gonna watch a lot in this NFL season. Look, I love more what the day symbolizes than the actual game. Like, okay, great, Jags are gonna go out there. Maybe we see Trevor Lawrence for a series, maybe we see Devontae Adams on the sideline wearing his jersey.
With some seeds.
With some sunflower seeds. But what it symbolizes to me is great. Like, okay, we're a day closer to the NFL season. This is the first actual tackle football game. We're about to see a bunch of them. We're going to see the Texans play in three. To me, it's more about the symbolism of the day than the actual football game in the 60 minutes from kickoff to final horn.
Isn't really football just a symbolism about life, though, Jeremy?
I think golf is more symbolism about life than football is.
You get tackled, and then you've got to get back up.
From Jeremy and Cody.
Golf's more of symbolism to life than football is.
I don't play golf, so I wouldn't know.
Well, maybe that shows a lot about your life.
That's kind of on you, yeah.
I play putt-putt.
That's kind of on you.
So does my 9-year-old son. That's the way he feels about it
as well.
Is
he good? Does he have a good spot? There's no good spots in Houston. There's not a great putt-putt
place. Well, they got rid of all the one on 59 shut down?
Yeah, man. There used to be a bunch of good spots for putt-putt in here, but there's not any good putt-putt spots in Houston.
There's a good one in Montgomery. It's a hike, though. It's pretty far.
Once you said Montgomery, I'm out.
It's pretty good hike. It's pretty far.
Yeah, I stand by my statement. There's not any good ones in Houston.
No, it's not
Jeremy.
Houston.
Like, yeah, thanks for nothing.
I will advocate that like the Woodlands and Katy, all that stuff is greater Houston area. Like I think my definition of Houston is probably greater than yours, Stutes, because I think we've had this conversation.
Kingwood is based on the police department.
It's a livable forest. Yeah, they annexed Kingwood. Probably about 20
the old
years
annexation
ago.
Of Kingwood.
I think they're still using the light blue squad cars out there.
Are they? I used to live in Kingwood. They annexed Kingwood 20, 25 yep. years ago. Yep. But yeah, Montgomery's far. It's out there. But that's probably the best putt-putt
course. I feel like, you know what? There's a branding opportunity here. The ESPN Houston putt-putt shop.
Didn't
we buy a building, build some courses. We could have host-themed holes on each of the, throughout the course.
Are they called courses?
Yeah, why wouldn't it be?
I don't know. I've just never
still
referred to it.
Holes, it's a course. Right?
I've never referred to a putt-putt track as a course. I don't think.
I have. I think so.
I thought Tiger Woods was building like the little Tiger Woods
putt-putt. Steph Curry's TV show say that they were playing the course?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. I don't think I've watched that. But I think Tiger Woods is bringing his putt-putt thing to Houston.
He has a putt-putt thing?
Yeah, it's kind of like a Topgolf, but more putt-putt than Topgolf.
I don't care about Tiger's thing. I want to know what type of branding is going to be on the Jeremy Branham hole at the putt-putt ESPN Houston course.
I know where you're going.
And what type of branding is going to be at the Joel Blank course at the ESPN Houston putt-putt
course. Mine's going to be a short par three.
Yours is going to be
a street theme.
Yours is
going to
be a subdivision.
Blankers.
Yours is going to be a subdivision, and every time you have a bad take, we'll go add another building to your massive estate on Bad Take Boulevard.
Which is an obstacle of getting to the hole.
Exactly.
Now we're on to something.
Exactly. You've got to putt under Jeremy's new pergola, and you've got to get it to the hole in the back.
Blankers is going to be an angry dog leg left. Because he's left-handed, and he's always angry.
I see what he did there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it took a long
Andy
way
has
to,
dogs.
Took a long way to get there.
Does.
We're dog lovers, but yeah. I got it.
I fell into that one. What Stutz's marketing going to be for his hole? Mm.
I think I've got a homework assignment for tomorrow, though.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to come up with the official
wide fairways,
putt-putt branding. Is that a fat joke?
It's
got
to be like a Texan.
It's more of a big joke than a fat joke.
You might have
joke.
To get like a ramp.
But if the shoe fits.
You have to hit it through a Texan's goalpost?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Hey, I'm not sure. We'll have to maybe a
gotta have
assignment
some Mama
there.
Stutes cooking in there somewhere.
It's a good point. You get a brownie before you tee off.
Now we got lots of gimmicks.
No,
I
if
like
you go
this.
Par or birdie,
yeah.
Then you get some like a Mama Stutes.
Okay,
build
so
dessert
a sweetener,
at the
a reward.
Bar.
Okay, so a sweetener if you succeed on the hole, yes. Birdie, par, whatever it be, but a Carbog beer before you tee off.
There you go. And see now we're Granados is going to be Blue Mountains. You yep. either you got to putt up the mountains and then across the mountains.
Or it has the little tunnel in the middle of the mountains like we see from some putt-putt courses that like it gives you a reward for higher risk.
Yeah.
I think that's something that has to be on Granados hole.
And if you don't go through the high risk one,
uh-huh.
then Granado calls you a bad name and says that you're a chicken, but he doesn't use those.
And
words.
We know that Lance's has to be involving some kind of a maestro de Bell.
Yeah.
And then somewhere there's a waterfall but has bad plumbing and there's pipes all over the place, but they're being repaired by a good company.
I also think there's got to be some place where you could clearly accidentally step and hurt yourself.
Sure.
And somewhere people have scouting reports on everybody that's played mm-hmm. the hole.
There's like a giant brick in the middle. Everyone's like, what's that brick? And it's like, no, that's a brisket.
Yeah.
Oh,
Granados also needs an out-of-bounds boundary, and whenever it goes out of bounds, it goes, forget about it. You have to have that with Granado's
like
hole.
It has
who doesn't?
How much do you believe in Jose Urquidy continuing to be Cy Urquidy, especially when you get to the playoffs?
This guy had an ERA that peaked right over 5, and now it's what, 3.63 since that moment? Like he's just been going lower and lower and lower. I don't know how I can't believe in this guy right now. It's a great job by Urquidy. It's a great job by the pitching staff to identify what was wrong, start working on that. I know you've been on this thing, Jeremy, about how he got rid of the cutter, and everything's really taken off from that point. I believe in him, and if there was a playoff series starting tomorrow, he'd be my fourth starter.
Fourth?
Who's ahead of him?
Who's the third? Are you going to put Javier out there?
No, I'm putting Lance up.
Okay. Well, but we don't know that he's available.
Well, I got a hunch he's going to be available.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's fine. To me, okay, you want to take Lance out of the equation. Is he part of the playoff rotation? Yes. If Lance McCullers is part of the equation, is Jose Urquidy part of the playoff rotation? The answer to me is still yes. Okay. He's higher on the pecking order than Javier and then Luis Garcia at this
point. Plus, like we talked about, Javier has no problem going to the bullpen because he's been there, done that.
Yeah. I think that's going to be a big weapon for the Astros come playoff time.
See, it's interesting. Like, the secondary conversation here, like, I love Urquidy going deep into games, too, which probably is more of an advantage in the regular season than the postseason because managers love to have a quick hook in the playoffs when it comes to their starting pitchers. Like, if you factor Javier, who has shown that he's a good reliever and he's a huge swing-and-miss guy, one of the best in baseball, Luis Garcia, to me, we were talking about this earlier, if Luis Garcia is emptying the tank, I think he has lights-out stuff because I think his fastball goes from 95, 96 to probably 97, 98, and he gets more, you know, break on his breaking stuff. How would you factor them into the bullpen, though? Because right now, you're like, priority list. Presley's at the top. You have Neris, Montero, Stanek. Like, does Javier jump any of those guys? Does Luis Garcia jump any of those guys?
And they're both in the situation of the starters. You know, he's giving you everything he's got for four innings, and then you're going to one of those guys. I think that's what you're primarily looking at. I would use Javier. I don't know what Lance's ability to go deep in a game is going to look
four
like.
Four innings, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and so that's why having Javier and why having Garcia would be such big pieces come playoff time, because if Lance is giving you four really good innings and then you got to go to Javier for two or three or Garcia for two or three and then turn it over to the rest of the bullpen, I feel like you can certainly do that if you're Dusty.
I like that. It's kind of like, okay, two trips to the lineup, because you look at all the advanced numbers, third trip to the lineup, if you start to see some fatigue there, okay, two trips to the lineup, you're gone, and now you have a Javier and a Garcia to where they're kind of the bridge to the back end of the bullpen. No. They're your bridge to Stanek in the sixth, your bridge to Montero in the seventh, Neris in the eighth, Presley in the ninth. I think it's a great way to try to deploy them once you get to the postseason.
It sounds real easy. You got to make sure those guys are getting through four. It felt like we had a pretty good Astros pitching staff to watch last year in the playoffs, and the next thing you know, everybody's getting bombed out in the first two innings.
It's what's crazy, though, because I was looking at this the other day, like the starting rotation last year in the playoffs, more Boston Series, World Series, because you still had Lance McCullers, who was the ace of this, you know, staff last year. Like, you were looking at Fromber, 2-3 innings. Luis Garcia, 2-3 innings. How did that team get to the World Series?
It's crazy, unbelievable. Whether you had Lance or not, just the shortcomings of who you were relying on prior to him getting hurt, and then after getting hurt to still get there and have some guys kind of find it mid-playoffs, which doesn't happen much, was pretty crazy.
I remember bargaining for, like, 9 outs from various starters at different times.
Their pitch count was through the roof. Yeah. And they weren't even close to what they were in the regular season.
Yeah.
And you're like, how the hell is this team continue to keep patching it together and winning? But they did.
I mean, I vividly remember asking BK and Jake, like, are we getting 9 outs out of so-and-so tonight?
Yeah.
I remember y'all talking about that. And it was like, would you take 3 innings, 2 runs from Luis Garcia tonight? And the answer was a majority yes.
Both shows we were it doing it.
Majority
like,
yes.
Seriously, that's where we're at.
Yeah, it's crazy. What's coming up on the Wheelhouse today, Stutes?
Paul Gallant is in for BK and Jake. So lots to get to with Paulie G. We talk about the Finns' sins at some point.
The Finns' sins.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and Charles Robinson will join us at 4:45 to talk about the Deshaun Watson situation and why the NFL doesn't want to give us what we want here in Houston.
Okay, very good. Robinson was tweeting like a madman yesterday. He was very informative. We'll be listening to that. Thanks to Brendan for doing all the hard work. He's Blank. I'm Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse with Stutes and Gallant next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.